This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Things are getting very messy over in the world of Karen Reed, and not in a good way for Karen in any way, shape, or form. At least, I think if you're looking at it objectively, there's been some pretty big revelations that have come out in the last handful of days from some very credible people. Expert witness Welcher testifying, pretty much saying flat out that Karen's car, based on his studies, and they put it all very nicely in court, basically, he believes that he was struck by Karen Reed's vehicle. Not talking about motive or anything like that, but just scientifically, based on the facts, based on the timing, based on the data and the incredible research that this guy did. It was boring, but it was very fascinating to see just the depth of what they can do to recreate these things, both physically and in a virtual type environment as well, 3D, through their modeling and recreation software. Stunning. I'm scared to see where technology is going to be in 10 years from now, because it was really quite amazing. Joining me to discuss, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. We are going to be talking about, what made all of this take place? Because there's a lot of things behind the psychology of this case, not just the physics of her allegedly hitting him, or very, very likely hitting him, or just hitting him, however you'd like to look at it this week. Siobhan, let's start with this. One of the things that we learned about with the doctor the last couple of days is the speed, the level at which that pedal was pushed down in the car of Karen Reed, and what kind of impact that made on his body. I want to break down more. What would possess someone to do that, to hit the pedal at 75-ish percent? And he did say it could even be more. So I'm going to guess more like maybe floored it. We'll just say floored it. In reverse, for that 50-some feet span, knowing that John had just gotten out of the car, I think one would think, if they're in their right mind, probably walking behind it, going towards the house, and then you hit the gas and you go flying back that fast and that hard. Normally we never hit the gas that hard and go in reverse. So it's quite a step to go in reverse at that speed, no matter what. Obviously drinking was involved. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a tough one to call, because where we immediately go, if we did, any of us did something like that sober, we think of anger, mm-hmm. right? That impulsive, you know, the fist through the wall moment, or the throwing something. It's like that angry physical reaction. Mm-hmm. So that's possible, but we don't really know for sure, because as you said, the big variable here is being drunk, mm-hmm. and being behind the wheel. And drunk people will plow into, as we know, DUI statistics, right? Mm-hmm. Will plow into a block wall sometimes at a high rate of speed because they're just not coordinated and they're not, you know, able to control their fine motor movements in a normal way. And, you know, but clearly in this case, it's possible that she was angry at him and just hit the gas.
And that's the thing. The only person who can answer that question is Karen Reed. And the state is already saying you were angry. And this was done on purpose. You know, that's why they're bringing the second degree charges. But you make a very good point there. Yeah. I mean, people plow into mailboxes when they're sober. People plow into people who are even in front of them when they're not sober, and they're not trying to hit them. Right. But so to hit the gas at that hard on a sober mind, yes, it does seem very difficult. And why on earth would you do that? I can't think of any time I've ever gone that fast in reverse for any reason. I mean, unless there's like you're sitting at a train stop and oh my gosh, it's derailing.
Yeah,
I better back up. Okay. I get that. Other than that, I you know, maybe trying to get out of a snowdrift, but that doesn't work. Don't do that. So it's rather nuts to think that somebody would do that. But yeah, when you're under the influence, a lot of bets are out as far as what could possibly be going on. When we look at what we do know about this, that they were fighting. We do know that was going on. She's, well, at least we know that according to her. Now, if that's real, I don't know. But according to her, there was some words said. John left the vehicle and then was headed towards the house, and then she floors it. What do you lean toward when there's alcohol? Is there a percentage you can look at and go, well, based on what we know here, that there was some tension here, that what we've heard about their relationship during the day, what we saw after with the angry voicemails, all of that, when you put it together, is there any way of ever getting into the mind of Karen and I ever really truly knowing where she was at that night?
Yeah, unfortunately, it would be wonderful if we had a way to do that. But I think so many of these things, it leaves us with speculation and what seems most likely, unfortunately.
Yeah. And that's a big, like I said, that's a big part of the case. That's something we can't really ever truly know. But what we can truly know now is data that flat out shows that vehicle hit John O'Keefe. So unless somebody else pulled her out of the driver's seat for a moment or two and jumped in and reversed it and then threw her back in, and she remembers none of this because she was blacked out drunk, and I might have just given the defense a whole new way to go. somebody did that. We do know that part. So I would think that would be kind of beyond a reasonable doubt that the vehicle hit him. That's manslaughter. That's probably an accident, if that's all it was. Where would the prosecution have to take this, in your opinion, beyond just all of the things we know about Karen's personality, beyond just all of the really shitty statements that she's made after the fact, and seemingly, you know, a lot of narcissistic tendencies, very selfish about herself on all this? What would a jury have to hear to get them to go beyond a reasonable doubt that it's murder too, and not just a drunk, horrible, horrible accident?
That's a really good question. And I don't have an answer for that because we haven't heard every bit of evidence that's going to be presented yet. Mm-hmm. But I, just speaking personally, was very much previously and in the other trial leaning toward, we're just never going to know. Mm-hmm. And therefore I would probably say there's always some reasonable doubt with this case. It's looking less like that at this point. So I think what the evidence that they've put on, especially with, is it Welcher? I am leaning the other direction at this point. I think that was really powerful evidence.
I feel like we now know what happened to John O'Keefe For sure. I feel like, but we don't know what was in the mind of Karen when that happened. And obviously she's fighting for her life to, you know, not go to jail or prison for a very, very long time, depending on what the jury thinks actually took place here. I want to watch a clip of her coming out of court the other day. There's a couple things I want us to take a look at, so we might even watch it twice. Let's first watch Karen, and then I want to rewatch it with you again, and we'll pay closer attention to her attorneys who are standing behind her and the reactions that they're giving to Karen speaking aloud. This was one of the more, I would say, probably foolish moments of Karen Reed in the last, probably most of the trial, where she's come out and made her statements on the steps out there in the morning. So let's go over to that. That's Karen Reed Vodka. Here it is. This is the one we want. This is her coming out of court the day.
Dr. Welch's recreations were good with the test tummy and the glancing glow.
And the grease paint on his arm? No.
Karen, did
and,
you?
And he backed up into himself at 2.2 or something miles per hour. So he tried to dress identically to John, but didn't do anything else to mimic what the Commonwealth is accusing me of.
So did you go?
I want to stop it there for a moment. What's your reactions to that? So she's immediately disparaging the grease paint thing, which I thought was kind of interesting. I'm not an expert in that, so I don't know how scientific that is. But it was kind of stunning to see exactly how a man of that stature and size would have been impacted by a vehicle. And then she's immediately dismissing the very detailed testimony that was given by Judson Welcher in the case, just showing all of the stats that were done to come to the very specific numbers that he did. And she's, so what, 2.2 or something? Just very much nonchalant, as if there's absolutely nothing to it. Obviously, again, yeah, she is fighting for her life. How much of this is show for Karen Reed, you think? And how much of this is her just really trying to, you know, she knows the writing's on the wall and she's really got to spin the story?
Her affect in as she's talking about this is, it just feels off to me. And it's hard for me to say exactly what it is about it, but there's almost a glib quality, I guess, is how I'd put it in how she's communicating here. And again, it's one of these subtleties about the way she presents herself. I think that it doesn't work in her favor. And clearly she's got her story and she's sticking to it. And I guess it's the almost snide making fun of, you know, the witness. It just, it comes off weird.
It comes off to me like girls in high school. Where they're just, you know, like, whatever, it just glib, like, just no, there's nothing in the world beyond them at that moment in time. And Karen very much still seems to be there, even though we're talking about her boyfriend and his death and an expert, again, who has nothing in the fight. I know they're trying to bring up today, well, you got paid. Yes, expert witnesses get paid. That's how that works. There's nothing shocking about that, as much as Alessi would like to try and
do
make that.
Yeah.
That, that is how that works. And based on the expertise, they're getting paid a going rate because they're competing with other expert witnesses to get the business. So that's normal. Let's watch a little bit more of her tone here on the court steps and some very interesting questions that are about to be asked.
Oh, in reverse, 24 miles an hour, 53 feet? The data is what the data is, and it's going to come out cleanly, more cleanly, in our case in chief. I think it's important to demonstrate, what is the Commonwealth accusing me of? The speed, the positioning? Recreate that for us. Back up into the crash test dummy at 24.2 miles an hour in the arm and see what happens. That's what I would want to see if I were you.
Do you recall?
So because they didn't do a crash test dummy and they actually put a human being there and did it at a slower pace, so you can make sure you're at an angle where it was likely a strike that would, or how to explain the strike took place, do the crash test dummy. What I thought was even more damning, though, right there was the data is what the data is. That was an interesting admission by Karen Reed, because she's been saying, and she will contradict herself here in a second, don't worry. But she has been saying, I didn't back up. That was her story. Obviously, that's not true. There's no disputing that you backed up, Karen. That is just part of it. But the data is what the data is. So that's her answer when she's been put into the corner. Thoughts on that piece?
That surprised me when I watched that last night. And again, the story has changed so often, but there's always that self-serving quality to whatever the story is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're all capable. In fact, most of us, at most of the time, create stories to explain things that happen in our lives where we are the good guy. Mm-hmm. And other people, we're it's a human thing. We're good at externalizing blame and, you know, putting the fault at someone else. I know my biggest crime has probably been speeding tickets. And as I've gotten older, I've definitely slowed down. But, you know, there was always a reason in my mind. Well, I was in a hurry. I had to, you know, blah, blah, blah. I had this, I had that, or I wasn't going that fast. Or the worst thing was, well, I don't think it was fair that they had that hidden camera up there. So, you know, I think it's a human tendency to do that, but some people are really good at it and really double down despite evidence otherwise.
And that's the thing. I mean, when you did that, you knew you were in the wrong. I mean, you were like, you know, like, I wish I wasn't. Like, you're trying to just juggle it in your mind and justify, well, this is why I did it. I know I'm in the wrong, but this is why I did it.
I paid the fine. Yes. I didn't go before the judge and try to argue it. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's not what's happening here, though. This is. I'm going to just theoretically say, I know I did this, and it's not a speeding ticket. It's killing someone. And then, beyond that, going out and creating this chaos that the attorneys drummed up from the mystery man that came and told them, look into the people in the house. And then suddenly there's this expedition to ruin the lives of many, many, many people, including first responders getting harassed.
Yeah.
We're up to like 50 some people who have to be in on this theory of he got beat up in the house, and to still be doubling down. And I'm saying that she's going to go out there and go, I did it. But to be doing this, I mean, this is like, it's kind of spooky vile that someone would continue to, she's beyond doubled. I don't even know what would be for thousands of times at this point.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing to me. That is she believing this at this point, even though she said it 50 other ways and it seems that she has acknowledged it? Or is she just that? Is it like kryptonite? Like just getting to the truth and admitting the truth to yourself or saying it aloud for other people to hear? And then, well, your image is screwed. But it's gotten far worse with everything. What do you think is going on in her mind about, let's again assume the reality that she hit him?
This is the thing that makes us think of a narcissistic tendency, mm-hmm. because a person like that who has narcissistic tendencies will protect their self-image and their public image at all costs, despite any evidence to, you know, the mm-hmm. contrary. And it has that feeling to it because it is so extreme. And then that tendency to blame everyone else with vigor, you know, mm-hmm. That's what I think, again, it just gives this a flavor of something that's really odd.
Yeah, it is very odd. There's a little bit more to it. And there's another piece we'll talk about here. It was a lot in the course of like 60 seconds. Let's continue on. Hear more. Back it up for a second.
That's what I would want to see if I were you.
Do you recall that at all, Karen?
Because it didn't happen.
Okay, there she goes again. There was a reporter saying, do you recall that at all? Referring to, do you recall backing up into John O'Keefe? And there she goes again saying, no, it didn't happen. Even though 30 seconds earlier, she said the data is what the data is.
Mm-hmm. You notice the smile at that point. It's like, okay, I'm not one of the folks that believes every little micro expression people have on their face carries the truth or any particular meaning. But the smile is a bit odd. Another thing that feels off. Why would you smile at that point? Mm-hmm. And so it makes me think again that, you know, does she consciously know this, or is this part of her tendency, something that she's really good at, which is misperceiving, depending on what fits her benefit at any given moment.
Yeah, it's she doesn't seem to know how to read the room and respond accordingly. I don't know what, I mean, the appropriate response, like if you're going to go and say these things, which is just stupid to begin with, but if you're going to go and say these things, I would think you'd be a little more stoic of, you know, you're fighting for your life, not, right. I don't know.
Right.
And it gets more laughy here in just a second.
Any update on if you're calling Proctor, given that his friends are now witnesses on your list?
No comments.
Derek, who are these four new witnesses? Did you say anything about them?
What no comments.
Testify to? Are you going to take the stand?
No comments.
So her attorneys stepped in there finally when they're asking about Proctor and the other one says, no comment. They got her really quick, got the reporters really quick. And I think that cued her to shut up. But then are you thinking you're going to take the stand? And that becomes a real jokey mode right there. Not a no comment. It's a no comment.
That's the weird, again, the weirdest part is the I can't remember how you put it a minute ago, but this socially not reading the room and not getting how are you giggling through this conversation? It's very odd.
Is it, I mean, are these just really, I feel like on Alan Jackson's face there, this looks like just a really uncomfortable smile. On hers, it looks a little more genuine. Like everyone's looking at me. I feel like there's two very different things going on in those two very different minds at that moment in time.
Yeah, I would think the attorney is saying, "Oh shit, you know, we've got to stop this because she gets herself in more trouble the more she talks."
I don't know that they have control over her. I don't know any other way to explain it. I want to watch it one more time. This time we'll play it all the way through, and we'll talk about the attorney's reactions a little bit more once we see the whole thing. Watch Alessi as well. He seems to have one of the more uncomfortable fake smiles as he comes out of the courtroom, and he'll be standing right behind her. Notice his mouth through it. We'll break it down here in a second.
Dr. Welch's recreation swore good with the test tummy and the glancing glow.
And the grease paint on his arm? No.
Look at that smile.
And he backed up into himself at 2.2 or something miles per hour. So he tried to dress identically to John, but didn't do anything else to mimic what the Commonwealth is accusing me of.
So did you go in reverse 24 miles an hour, 53 feet?
The data is what the data is, and it's going to come out cleanly, more cleanly, in our case in chief. I think it's important to demonstrate what is the Commonwealth accusing me of. The speed, the positioning, recreate that for us. Back up into the crash test dummy at 24.2 miles an hour in the arm and see what happens. That's what I would want to see if I were you.
Do you recall that at all, Karen?
It's almost like clenching his
neck. Because it didn't happen. Any update on if you're calling Proctor, given that his friends are now witnesses on your list?
No comments.
Derek, who are these four new witnesses? Can you say anything about them?
What no comments.
Testify to? Are you going to take the stand?
No comments.
Oh, how silly. You're following what your attorney has been suggesting you do for all along.
Yeah, he looks uncomfortable.
I mean, I'm obviously not a body language expert. I know you're not either, but just watching Alessi back there, I'd be curious to like hear from one to like, because there was a lot of weird lip movements there and a lot of twitching, a lot of itching.
This was interesting. It's sort of like, stop it, you know.
It looked like he had his mouth open because he was kind of like, almost like he was ready to try and interject if he had to at any moment. It's like if you're a parent and your kid's, you know, doing something for the first time, especially when they're little, and there's a chance they could injure themselves. You're just kind of like, you're just ready to jump in really quick. Like, oh, you're not going to fall off the bridge. Not if you're watching. Not if you should be walking over a tall bridge with your children that could fall. But I think my parents did a few times, but that was the 80s. But yeah, just a very, very uncomfortable moment there. Again, for everybody in the room. With people like this, they got to be hard to control. I mean, and not that like one should be trying to control someone else, but in a effect of an attorney keeping your client under control so they don't get themselves in more trouble. Why do you think it is that she is, it has this kind of carte blanche to do and say whatever she wants?
You have to wonder how much they've tried and failed, but it is bizarre because with the story shifting, with all the media stuff she's done, the films, it's working against her. And it seems like saying nothing would be the smartest thing at this point, but she can't seem to constrain herself.
Is there any chance here that this thing was very, very traumatizing for her as well? I would imagine it would be for almost anyone if you hit somebody. And she really just doesn't remember it completely. I mean, there seems to be pieces here that she remembers, but I don't know. I mean, would that explain the constant changings of the stories? I mean, it's easy to look at this. It's very narcissistic. It's very borderline type behavior. Is there any world in this where this is some sort of a weird trauma response and this is what we're getting?
Great question. My initial impulse is to say probably not, but we don't know everything about the human brain. Mm-hmm. And it's possible that when combined with the alcohol, that has certainly impaired her memory and impaired her perceptions. You know, I have vacillated from, does she remember it, truly remember anything at all? Or is she just creating stories in her mind about what happened? Mm-hmm. Or does she partially remember and then try to fill in the blanks? I don't trust her memory. Mm-hmm. It would be a very unusual for it to be a trauma response and have no memory at all. Mm-hmm. That, you know, my gut says, most likely not. It could cause her to alter the story, though, and to shift the story, because people with, you know, with certain kinds of personality traits, whatever those may be, they really cannot accept that they're at fault for something bad that happens. And so they're always looking for an alternate story. They will change their perception of things. And that's either what's going on currently or something that went on in the past. So I lean more that it's self-serving, even though a lot of it may be unconscious. She's not aware that she's shifting her story, but there's this real need to preserve her self-image. And that's most likely what's driving it.
I bring that up because we'll talk about it next week. The Sherry Papany story, there's a new documentary out and you and me are going to break all that down. And there's elements of that in this, the self-preservation of oneself. And she's trying to argue that it's all a trauma response and that it's not this disorder or that disorder. Although they do recognize that she has some, but the reactions and her story, they're saying, well, she's reacting this way because of this, not that. Anyway, that's why I was kind of wondering about this case too, of like, well, could that be another area that really just presents more like what we would think with someone who's going that way? Let me ask you this. Like I said, the evidence is pretty damning. I think a reasonable person at this point would think, yeah, she hit him. I don't know about the motive, but when the image that she's constructed for herself, her very identity, and she's had this incredible amount of support for a very long time. Very motivated. They're the people who, you know, have built her up. I just saw a clip the other night when she was at some sort of dinner and she was thanking them all because what she lost was her, what did she say? It was lost my reputation, I believe is what she said. And you guys have built it back tenfold for me. And I thank you so much. It was all about her ego. And thank you guys for basically rebuilding my ego. And I found that very, very fascinating with someone like this. But going more to the question of what I was getting to, you got somebody who is going through all of this. They're getting that incredible amount of support. And now it's coming. It's just crashing into a brick wall because there are certain things you cannot argue. Your car's not lying. His phone's not lying. Those things don't have opinions. They're just, they are what they are. And they show that you hit John O'Keefe. When that cracks, when that harsh reality is simply there We're not here to diagnose, but I'm wondering if this will give us a little more direction on where she is or where she's going. Let's assume that she does maybe have some sort of personality disorder going on here, or very strong traits of. How does narcissism respond differently than, you know, borderline or histrionic type structures, or someone who doesn't even have any of those things? What are we witnessing here in real time with the reactions that we're getting as the walls are literally closing in?
Yeah, the narcissistic person will probably never let go of their story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen that with Alex Murtaugh. We've seen that with Lori Daybell. They never shift from what their story is. And in that way, they don't decompensate. You know, mm-hmm. they typically don't break. Somebody with more borderline features, more histrionic features, you're going to see more emotional dysregulation and more cracking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, we're not seeing any of that at this point. We're still seeing the grin and the thank you for building up my self-esteem. And this would probably be a person that would take that story to their grave, you know, that nothing was their fault and they did nothing wrong.
Deep down, do they know it, though?
I think it's an incredible, it's almost like what I call the negative hallucination,
mm-hmm.
the refusal to see what's obvious, the mm-hmm. refusal to see what's right in front of you. And I don't know that deep down they ever are very grounded in reality.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it would be healthier if they were, but.
it almost makes them easier to understand if you know that they're not, because mm-hmm. otherwise it's like, oh, you do know all this. That's where you get to like evil territory, where it's like, right. Oh, you're just really, really aloof in a lot of ways. Right. One more, because we still have the defense coming up and they're going to present their case in chief and the jury is going to hear a lot of things. They're going to hear a lot of distractions as well. They're going to hear about the bad officers and how poorly the investigation went, which I agree on those things. I don't disagree that those facts are, in fact, there. But again, now, at the end of the day, it has been factually proven that she hit John O'Keefe with her vehicle. You're going to hear all these things over here, but nothing can change this fact. The data is what the data is. So you can add everything you want over here. You could find them, you know, plotting, anything you want. You can literally have them doing and saying anything over here now, in my mind, that will never change this fact. So she doesn't get out of jail free card because there's some bad cops over here that mm-hmm. maybe really wanted to make sure she got convicted. And getting to know Karen a little bit more, I kind of see why. But the fact that this is such fact over here, how do you think a jury is going to take in the rest of that? Do you think there is still going to be room for reasonable doubt on that she hit him? Not that it was second degree, not that it was intentional, but that she hit him. Or how easy can they be pulled off track, even though this is a solid fact? And this over here is conjecture.
Yeah. Unfortunately, humans are not very good at facts. We tend to make decisions based upon emotions, on likability. Our own biases always factor into it. Mm-hmm. If there are people who have biases against, you know, dirty cops or people who are unethical or people who say bad things about women, that flavors how we interpret facts.
Yeah.
And so at this point, we don't know how compelling the defense evidence is going to be. And it's a hard call. We like to think that people are logical and are going to pay attention to details and facts and expert witnesses. But again, it's a who knows at this point.
It is. It's interesting that she made a reference comparing herself to O.J. Simpson several weeks ago, which was a case where factually looks pretty damning, but because of what happened over here, somehow the jury equated that. I would say there's even more facts over here in this case to prove that she hit him, because you have the data. We didn't have, you know,
exactly.
tracking and all that with OJ.
Yep.
We just had DNA that was everywhere.
Right.
So, but again, I mean, to the most reasonable people in the world, even way after the fact, there ain't nobody still around that's saying, I think OJ didn't do it. It was more so on principle of,
yes,
this is a black man who's being attacked in America, and simply because of the fact that he's black and these cops were crooked, we should let him go. That's essentially how society looked at it at that point in time. It was very segmented at that moment. This obviously a very different type thing. You know, she's not a black man. She's a white woman. So race isn't really a part of this. And likability, there's not a lot of it here. She's attractive physically, but in terms of likability, there's not a whole lot of that there. And that's where it's going to be interesting to see, again, just how far it could go. Hung jury, I think, is still very much a possibility, especially if you have somebody that may vote and cast their ballot to say not guilty strictly on F the police. That could still be a very real possibility where we get hung again here. Yeah, I don't know where this is going to go yet. I'm not thinking it's going to be not guilty, but I could see another hung jury. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. It certainly could be, depending on how compelling the defense case is and the kind of doubts that they're going to throw and what kind of expert witnesses they bring. Because expert witnesses who are saying opposite things often confuse the jury and they end up not listening to either one.
And that seems to be what's been going on ever since these hard facts and truths have come down. You haven't heard the defense really arguing a whole lot about the facts. It's just, look over here at this. You got paid for your work. Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, lots of don't look over here. The emperor has mm-hmm. no clothes. It's going to be fascinating.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own. Surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.